So we are the ins and outs of creating basically a short-term rental, any type of a short-term rental, whether it is an Airbnb, VRBO, maybe you want to rent rooms from your house. Maybe you want to arbitrage, which means you're going to sign a lease with a landlord or with an owner somewhere, and you become kind of the host and the landlord. And now you're going to sublet that as a short-term rental. And we're also going to talk about midterm rentals tonight and the difference between short-term rentals and midterm rentals. The midterm kind of comes under the short-term category only because I think it looks a little more like a short-term rental than it does long-term. And so I'm going to describe that as well before we get started. So for those of you that are listening in, please know that if you want to do a short-term or a midterm, the property itself is going to look similar. And here's why. When you do a long-term rental, you're going to, of course, either buy and hold a property. However you go about doing a long-term rental, maybe you're going to house hack, maybe you're in a duplex and you want to rent one side and live in the other side. But either way, you're going to supply that rental with what your market is most comfortable with, wherever that property is located. Some folks, they put a long-term rental out there to rent with appliances. Some folks, they don't have appliances. Some folks include appliances to mean a washer and dryer as well. And some folks decide that the appliances are just going to be a stove. Oh, can't hear us. Can you guys hear me, Josh? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Joseph, if you cannot hear, check the volume on your device. Check on your device to make sure everybody else can hear me. So check the volume on your own device. Could be you have your volume turned down, and give that a try. So anyway, with a long-term rental, it's up to you whether you want to include, the stove, the refrigerator, a dishwasher, if your unit is, has the capabilities of having a dishwasher. I have some little one bedroom units that do not have space in the kitchens to have a dishwasher, so they don't. And so I simply advertise them that way. But once you find out what your market will bear for a long-term rental, you're going to do your homework and find out what are the rents in the area. If you have a one bedroom or a two bedroom or a three bedroom, and whether it's a duplex, whether you have off-street parking, it's all those things go in to deciding what the fair market value of rents is for that long-term rental. Now, here's the formula. So take some notes. Whatever your long-term rental will bear, a midterm rental will bring in about twice that. Okay, so if you're renting a unit for, let's say, $700 a month, your midterm rental will bring in about $14. Okay, now that's gross. And so out of that, that's where you would then compute whether you're arbitraging and you have to pay rent, or whether you have a mortgage if you're buying that unit, or if it's free and clear. But anyway, that's what the gross would be. Now, short-term rental, which is also what we're talking about, a short-term rental will bring in about four times in a month's time. It'll bring in about four times what a long-term rental will be. Now, keep in mind, you're like, oh, well, then I'm going to short-term rent everything. Well, that sounds good in theory, but you have to see what the market will bear on where your unit is located. And so if you can short-term rent, that's where you're going to make the most money, but that's also where you're going to do the most work, because you're going to have to flip that unit every time somebody moves on. And a midterm and a short term, you're going to have them fully furnished with utilities paid by you. So just know that that's kind of how a midterm and a short term, that's why they look similar, because you're going to furnish them. You're going to furnish them with the beds and the couches and the dishes in the cupboard and everything that a short term or midterm renter is going to need for them to move in there. And so again, you might say, well, who is going to do, who would be my short-term renter? Who would be my midterm renter? A short-term renter can be anything less than 30 days. And if you're approved by your city zoning, which we are, where my short-term rental, I have one in my home, and my city requires that I not let anybody stay more than 30 days, because then it no longer qualifies as a short-term renter. They become a midterm or long-term, and I'm in a residential area, and my city does not want us to have rentals. You know, they want it to be owner occupied. So we're allowed to do short term in our residence as long as it's less than 30 days. So I have somebody that might stay for a weekend or 4 days or even a week. I think the longest I've had in my short term was 2 weeks. And I actually prefer not to have someone that long. I like to get into that room since it's in my home. I like to get into that room like every 4 days. So a 4 day, a 2 day, a 3 day, those are all my sweet spot. I really don't like them to be more than 4 days. And so that's both basically what we get in short-term rentals. Now in my midterm, I cater to the website, and we're going to talk with Josh about that as well. I actually have my listing on Furnished Finders. And so it's corporate housing. And oftentimes it's the traveling medical professionals. It doesn't have to be, we call it traveling nurses, but I have a guy right now that's renting my midterm, and he's not a nurse. He's in the medical field, but he's not a nurse, but he does travel with what his credentials are. And he is in high demand. And so he's been there through two, I'll call it internships with this particular hospital. And he actually is applying to do a third one. And so he comes for 13 weeks at a time, and he's been there for 26 weeks, and he's getting ready to apply to go another 13 weeks. And he said he's going to keep reapplying. He loves the place. He loves where he's working. He loves everything about it. He said, I could be here a year. I said, okay, twist my arm. So anyway, and I'm getting twice what the rent that I would normally get from a long-term rental. So that's the formula. So anyway, I want to jump back over and see, Joseph, can you hear us yet? I just want to make sure that you can. I'm just kind of looking at everybody that's on board. We've got about 13 people in the audience. And Joseph, can you give us a heads up? Can you hear us yet? Did you work that out on your end? Yes. Okay. It was on his end. Yeah. Good. Okay. Perfect. So anyway, Josh, I want to just ask you a quick question, because I'm going to go over to Adam first, but I want to ask you a quick question. You had sent me a link to your little video.
Yeah.
And I went around and searched for it real quick here and didn't locate it. Do you have that you could play for us at some point during this interview so that we can actually see pictures of your midterm that you're going to talk about?
Yeah. I'm on my phone here.
Okay.
I could probably send you a link real quick, and if that would be easier.
Yeah, if you could put the link in the chat, then I can maybe copy and paste it into, because I'm on my computer. So I'll let you put the link in the chat if you can do that. So while Josh is doing that, we're going to go to Adam. I'm going to tell you that my name, of course, is Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income coach, and I started this particular podcast on the ins and outs of creating a short-term rental, which now we're going to include midterm in that as well, because it looks similar. And Adam is my co-mod, and so I'm going to let Adam introduce himself to you and what it is that he does, and I'll let him put his contact information in the chat as well. And so sure. all of our info will be in the chat for anybody that needs it.
Yeah. Yeah. My name is Adam Messmer. I'm a mortgage broker with Motto Mortgage. My NMLS number is 980119 for the regulatory piece of our conversation. But I do all kinds of lending plenty of stuff for short-term rentals, but commercial or hard money, conventional, really any kind of money that you need, give me a shout. I'll put my information in the chat here in just a moment, and I'd be happy to help. One thing, did we address? So James had a question about credit. You mind if I take care of that?
Nope. Kathy? Go ahead.
Yeah. James had a question. He said he's interested in knowing the funding side of Airbnb. Can we use our business credit score to get approved for property for leasing?
Yes, I can speak a little bit to that. When you apply some of these large complexes, one of the first questions, if you want to arbitrage, is you ask, can can I do corporate housing with you? And they go, absolutely. And so what they want, though, is they want to make sure that you're a corporate type entity that wants to do corporate housing. And so they want you to fill out the application with them under your corporate information. And sometimes a credit reference is a part of that application process.
Gotcha. I read the first half of that and I thought he was going towards financing. So I was going to answer that, but you did. So that's great. But yeah, so my story is I've been in finance since 2008 because I have excellent timing, and I've been an Airbnb owner since 2020, again, because I have excellent timing. So, yeah, both at the beginning of those years is when I got into each of my respective fields. And, yeah, it's been a wild ride, but that's the short and thick of it for me.
Yeah. So do you guys see the humor in that? For those of you that maybe aren't in the industry as knee deep as what the three of us are that's on this call, Adam got into financing right when the market crashed. And he got into doing short-term rentals right when the pandemic hit and everything got canceled and nobody was traveling. So.
And I'm still surviving.
It's all good. It's all good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to make Adam my co-host. He is my co-host, but I'm going to officially make him my co-host. So if for some reason I get bumped off, Adam will stay on. It's not likely that we both get bumped off a call at the same time, but we always try to be prepared just in case. All right. So now we're going to go over to Josh. Josh, give us a little bit of your history, and then I'm going to share my screen and see if we can't play the video when we're ready. And the only thing is sometimes on a video, the audience can't hear it. And there's a special button I'm supposed to push on a Zoom call for them to hear it. And I'm not sure what that button is yet. But I trust I'll find it once I share my screen. So Josh, go ahead and give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, thanks. Yes, I'm Josh Hively. I'm here in Columbus, Ohio with Kathy and Adam. Full-time in real estate right now, have been since maybe for the last 2 years. Background, sort of a winding road. I grew up in South Carolina, but my family's from Ohio, so eventually we made our way back to Ohio. I've been here since maybe 2000. Got, just coming out of high school, got into a lot of trouble right at the end of high school and then for, several years afterwards. And I've got a pretty lengthy run of sobriety. And so basically, when I got sober, that was a big shift for me. And for the next couple of years, really trying to piece things back together and figuring out what do I want to do moving forward. I went down a pretty typical path in this realm of struggling with personal finances and finding Dave Ramsey, and then reading Rich Dad Poor Dad and learning about real estate investing. That kind of led into the world of Bigger Pockets, and just as literally like Google searching like how to build wealth, how to save a few bucks, that kind of stuff. And it just all this information I was getting was like real estate, real estate, real estate. So I was like, well, I guess I'll do real estate. And so that's been, we bought our first, my wife and I bought our first piece of real estate in 2019. And that's what we do full time now. My business partner and I, Harvey Juergen, him and I own a home investors franchise. So if anywhere in the country, you've probably seen our signs around, we buy houses. So that's our primary business. And then we also sort of still do real estate as a side hustle in looking at commercial. We just bought our first commercial office building. And then some of the short-term, mid-term rental stuff we do off to the side.
We have a Happy House Hunters mastermind group, and Josh was nice enough to let our mastermind actually tour his new office building. So if anybody is interested in seeing what that is all about, get in touch with me at kathybinner.com, and we can actually show you the video of our tour of Josh's new office building purchase. It's pretty awesome, actually. Mm-hmm. So Lisa just jumped in. She is new to the Miami rental scene. She used to run an Airbnb in New York. She moved here about a month ago. She wants to run one there in Miami, but she wants to know, how do you figure out the zoning for certain properties and if short terms are even allowed? And I can answer that. And Adam and Josh, please jump in before we go on. You just have to go to the municipality that governs that address. And you just have to double check. They should have something on the books in the zoning for that municipality on what their requirements are for long-term rentals, short-term rentals, and midterm rentals, all three of those. And they'll tell you what's allowed and not allowed. Any additional information, guys?
No, I mean, every municipality is different. So yeah, just check with them directly.
Yeah.
I would say on the flip side of that, one resource that I would not use would be a platform like Airbnb, because there are plenty of folks who are renting properties as short-term or midterm rentals in places where they are not allowed. Mm-hmm. So I would not say just going to Airbnb and seeing other listings would not be a good way to verify that. So,
yes, good point. Good point. She said, how do I find out the municipality? You can just Google it. You need to find out. You start from the top. You know, it's the state you're in, and then you go to the city that you're in. And once you're in the city, then you have to find out where the zoning office is for your actual address. Because we're in Columbus, Ohio. So just to give you a great overview, in Columbus, Ohio, you've got the city of Columbus, but then you have these smaller municipalities all around and within the city of Columbus. Some are considered a suburb of Columbus, so they come under Columbus zoning. Some have their own separate zoning offices, and so you'd have to go just to that particular village or entity within the city of Columbus to find out the rules. And I do know in Florida that happens sometimes, because I'm in the Sarasota area. I'm just right below, I have a condo in Sarasota, so I'm right below the whole Tampa Bay. And just above Tampa Bay is Clearwater. And one of our guests on this very podcast, she and her husband bought a condo in Clearwater, and they lived in it for a while. And then when they decided they loved it there and they were going to buy a house, they thought, well, why don't we just Airbnb the condo, you know? And they lucked out. When they checked with the city of Clearwater, there was only two boroughs within the city of Clearwater that allowed short-term rentals. And guess what? Their condo was in one. So she did it accidentally. So it worked out for her. So she was able to Airbnb it, because she said, we didn't pick it on purpose because we were going to live there ourselves. And she said, and then when we decided to move into a house and rent that out, they just happened to be in the right spot. So you just kind of have to dig a little bit and do your homework. So just keep that in mind. So back to you, Joshua.
I mean, as far as background, I think that's it. As in our business, we primarily have been focused on long-term rentals. We've been really growth focused and looking at building our business and doing wholesale transactions and flipping, and then also just building the rental portfolio of long-term rentals. And so, you know, starting out, it really didn't make sense for us to spend the extra time and energy looking at these alternative leasing options. We were just kind of trying to churn properties. We would, you know, rehab them, hand them off to a property manager, put tenants in place, and just kind of, you know, move on from there. I mean, if we want, we can get into specifics on one of our midterm rentals.
Yeah. If you want to, go ahead.
Yeah. And I'll sort of caveat this. One of the things that I've told folks for a long time is, you know, when Kathy was talking about the formula earlier, which is great, and I find that to be pretty close to accurate myself. But I often tell people you can't use that formula to compensate for buying a bad deal. And so we've seen that in the past with other folks, where they look at Airbnb numbers And then they use that to justify a purchase price for a piece of property, and it winds up being too much. And then in the long term, it doesn't wind up being a good deal. So, you know, when we're in acquisitions mode, we're kind of basing everything off of long-term mm-hmm. rental numbers. And then if we can kind of sweeten the deal with a midterm tenant or a short-term tenant, then we can decide to do that. But I don't recommend folks going in, with those numbers in their underwriting. But the first midterm rental that my wife and I did together, that's actually sort of how we got into it. And you'll see in the video, it's a bit of a unique deal. A family member of mine actually owned the property for the last several years as a long-term rental. And they're just not interested in being landlords. They were self-managing. They had a good tenant, but just, weren't interested in the day-to-day of that. So they were deciding to sell the property. This particular house is very unique. It's a single family house, but it's a one bedroom loft. So it's about 800 square feet. Mm. And when you walk in the front door, you can see the entire space. We went back and forth for a while about buying the property. They wanted closer to retail, which, the hesitation for us was it didn't work in our typical underwriting, where we're kind of looking at more of like the Burr type acquisitions, where we're buying with, private money, we're renovating, and then we're refinancing. Well, this one was a little bit more retail. So we hesitated for a while, but ultimately the deal was too good to let go. It's a little bit hard to tell exactly what the house is worth because there's very little to compare it to. But it's in a very good neighborhood here in Columbus, Worthington. And so ultimately we just decided, I think if we do a midterm tenant, we can, make this thing work. And in the long run, it'll be a good buy for us.
Now, my question is, and like you said before, I always start off with a plan B. So I always make sure that the numbers work on long-term rental. And like you said, then if I can sweeten the deal by making it a midterm or a short term, but if for some reason another pandemic hits and so people stop traveling or for whatever reason, everybody has to have a place to live. So I can always fall back, if you will, on a long-term rental for that particular property. Do the numbers work on this one as a long-term rental, or was it like kind of close and you're really crossing your fingers that this midterm's going to save the day?
Yeah, so that's a great point. And I do feel like we had plan B and C.
Okay.
Plan B would have been long-term tenant. Again, it's a little bit tricky because with the uniqueness of the property, it's a little bit hard to pin down what the actual long-term rent is. If you found the right tenant, I think you could charge a decent long-term rental rate and you would probably have a tenant for a long time. But we're a little bit unsure. So I think worst case scenario, as a long-term tenant, it's, let's call it a break even, which is not the end of the world. Especially given the fact that this is, A-class real estate. This is in one of the best cities here in Columbus, really good schools, all of those things.
So I want to interject right here that here's my theory. There's no bad real estate deal because time will turn a bad deal into a good deal because the real estate will appreciate. So whatever you pay for at today's prices, in 10 years, it's going to be worth more, even if it's a slower market, it's still going to be worth more. Look at what property sold 10 years ago compared to today. Look at what property sold for 20 years ago compared to today. So even if you felt like you overpaid 20 years ago, if you bought one of those today, you're saying, thank God I bought that 20 years ago, even if I overpaid, because it's got great equity today. And so I don't think there is a bad real estate deal, just time makes it better.
Yeah. And sort of part of the uniqueness of this one too, is that it's actually the dirt. It's the piece of land here that's actually valuable. The house is so small and unique that really the long-term play for this property is probably to tear down the house and to build something new. You know, that would, we paid $190,000 for the house. And I think if you took the house away, I think the lot is worth $150,000. So, and similar to like we talked about with the office building before, the office building that we recently purchased, we're pretty close to the cost of the lot minus the building. So, but on this particular one, plan C for us is, and this we can, I'll try to stay out of the weeds with this, but if anybody has questions, feel free to follow up with me. We actually have this property under contract via a lease option. And so for those that aren't familiar, the way that works is we agreed to pay a certain purchase price for the property. And we, that's, and that, so that is allowed for a 3-year period. So for any time from now until the next 3 years, at any given time, I have the option to purchase that property for $190,000. In the meantime, until I do execute that option to purchase, I've just paid the previous owner or the current owner a monthly payment as rent, basically. And so in this particular one, we pay $1,000 a month for this lease option. And $900 of that goes to the owner as like a rent payment. And then $100 of that goes towards our principal. So when we do decide to purchase, we get a little bit of credit there. That, and those numbers are totally negotiable, but 900 was the rent that the seller was getting from the previous tenant. So that just made sense. We were able to pay a little bit more than that. They were kind of getting the same thing that they were before, but now they don't have the headache where we take over, we've taken over all the maintenance expenses, utilities, all that sort of stuff. So, so that's kind of plan C in this scenario is, okay, if this whole thing doesn't work out at all, there's another pandemic, whatever, the economy goes boom, we are able to just walk away from this lease option. Now we did put down a couple $1,000s for a deposit, I think maybe $3,000. And so that would be non-refundable. And then the other thing that would not be refundable is any repairs that we made to the house. And I think we did maybe about $20,000 in between renovations and furnishing. So if
which
we did,
which of course away, you could take the furnishings with you.
Yep. Yeah, the furnishings could go. But, you know, but if in worst case scenario, if this thing really went off the rails and was imploding, you know, we cut our losses and we lose, you know, 10 or 15 grand. We felt like the upside was enough that it was, mm-hmm. we were willing to take that chance. But as a deep plan C, you know, we do still, if we were losing money hand over fist, we do still have a way to.
You have an out clause by just the fact that you're on a lease purchase.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. Now, is everybody ready to see this place? I hope I can figure out my, I hope I can figure out how to get the video so that you can hear it. So bear with me here. Now, let's see, what do I need to do to make it so we can hear it? It's the share sound is clicked. I think that's what has to be clicked. So, can everybody hear it? Yes, good.
My name is Josh with Simple Solutions Real Estate, and welcome to our tiny house. So this is the most recent project that we've completed. I wanted to share this house with you guys because it's a very unique property and the way that we structured the deal was pretty creative. This particular property is also a unique example of the way that even when we're paying full retail prices for houses, we're able to still generate some cash flow. So the way we were able to acquire or gain control of this property is using what we call a lease option. What a lease option is a contract that we sign with the seller that allows us to maintain control of the property for a certain period of time. And then at any point throughout that period, we maintain the option to purchase the property. One of the really great things about lease options is that the terms that you negotiate with the seller are 100% negotiable. So the other creative part of this deal is when we're looking for tenants, we've decided to lease this property out on the back end to what we call as a midterm rental. So when you're looking at leasing a property, there's sort of three main areas that you can look at. There's short-term rentals, which can be described as anything generally less than 30 days in length. Midterm rentals could be anywhere from 30 to 365 days. And then most typically what you see are long-term rentals, which would be, you know, 1 year at a time. For this particular house, we decided to go with the midterm rental. And the reason we did, because in this area, there are some restrictions around short-term rentals, less than 30 days. And since we're paying closer to retail price for this house, putting a long-term tenant in here just didn't make the most financial sense. So we decided to go with the midterm. Midterm rentals can be really great because they have some of the advantages of short-term rentals, such as the higher monthly income, and also some of the advantages of long-term rentals where we have less turnover and some lower fixed costs. So let's go over some of the numbers on this particular deal. When we negotiated the lease option, we made the length of the lease option for a 3 year period, and the purchase price is $190,000. Now that was in as is condition. There previously was a tenant here for about 6 years, so the property needed some updating. A couple of the things that we did here, we put a new roof on the property. We placed a new furnace. The bathroom got totally gutted and remodeled. And then of course we painted cosmetic things as well as put all the furnishings into this property. And that in total was about $18,000 or $20,000. So the other portion of the lease options were we agreed to pay a $3,000 down payment. And then we pay $1,000 a month in for the lease. Now, the way that $1,000 is divided up is $900 of that goes to the seller as a rent payment. And then there's $100 a month that will go down to paying off the balance when we do go and execute the option to purchase and actually buy the house. Thanks for watching. And if you have questions about lease options, midterm rentals, or really all things real estate, feel free to reach out to me. My contact info is below.
Isn't that a cute place?
The cutest.
I love it.
It's awesome. So Josh, your carrying cost for that property is $1,000 a month.
Can you still hear my screen?
Yes. What do you mean?
Proposals.
All right, turn that off.
Question. Yeah. There we go.
There you go.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
All right, now we're back.
So, Josh, your carrying cost for the property is $1,000 a month. $900 goes to rent. $1,000 goes to principal pay down, and then plus utilities. Is that basically it?
Yeah. Yeah. So we pay for the utilities there. Water, gas, and electric. And then we also, with both of our midterm rentals, we're also including Wi-Fi.
Cool.
And the other cost that we have in there that often get overlooked are things like maintenance, capital expenditures, and vacancy. For instance, this particular house has had a sort of never-ending leaking roof saga, which to this day, I was actually just on the roof of this house yesterday, We've had two new roofs in the last 5 years, and it still was leaking this weekend. So those sort of costs, those keep coming as well.
What kind of occupancy rate do you see in this?
So both of our midterm, well, I guess I will say this particular property we have rented for, just for context, this particular one is rented for $2,450 per month. And I think we may even have a little bit of room to come up from there, but we're pretty happy with that number. What was your question?
Occupancy, like how often, I mean, do you get a month at a time? And I mean, do they go month by month or do they book out for a couple of months or what are you seeing so far?
Yeah, so at both of our midterm rentals right now, we are leased by traveling nurses who are both working at Riverside Hospital, which is pretty close. This particular one, she came, the original contract was the typical 13 weeks. And then she, actually, when she leased with us, she was about a third of the way through a 13-week contract. So she had 2 months with us. And then she just recently extended. So she, assuming she doesn't extend again, she will be in our property for about 5 months. Our other midterm rental, we have a new tenant moving in on the first. They are a typical 13-week contract, and they've already told me too that they plan to extend as well. So that one mm-hmm. could easily be 6 months.
You mentioned the standard contract of 13 weeks. Is that standard for traveling nurses that they're in there for 13 weeks?
Yeah, as far as I know, for across the country, that's for a traveling nurse, that's a typical contract length.
Cool.
And the reason for that is they can do 4 assignments a year at 13 weeks each. And so that's how most of the hospitals have it set up, most of the medical facilities. And so what happens is when you go on to Furnished Finders, which is where I'm listed, is that where you're listed, Josh, is Furnished Finders or?
Yeah, both of our properties are on Furnished Finder, and we've had good success with that. We did just list them on Airbnb as well, but we are listing them. I think Furnished Finder will be our bread and butter. The Airbnb listings, we've bumped up the price quite a bit just to kind of see what kind of interest we could get.
Yeah, mine. I only have one so far. I'd love to have 4 or 5. But I have one so far, and it is also on Furnished Finders. And what happens is Furnished Finders is a great little platform where once you put in what you offer, and once you do that, then when traveling medical professionals, they mm-hmm. call them traveling nurses, but a lot of them are more than just nurses, and their hospitals are needing this staffing. And so when those folks come to, let's say, the Columbus, Ohio area, they will go on Furnished Finders and they'll enter what they're looking for. And then Furnished Finders automatically will match them up and drop right into your inbox. You know, here's 20 medical professionals that are looking for what you're offering. And it gives you the opportunity to make some one-on-one connections there. You know, and I offer to show them my space. I really kind of personalize it. Once I narrow in on 2 or 3 that I'm really interested in, then I can actually work those leads, if you will. And Furnished Finders constantly says, you know, you've got another lead. I bet I get on mine, and I don't know about Josh, but I get on mine about 20 leads a day.
Wow.
Of professionals that are looking for what I have to offer. Now, I've got a guy in mine, and I can't. You know, I can't do anything for a minute. Those leads are just sitting there and I'm like, oh, well, too bad. I don't have anything available because I already have mine rented. And yeah. Again, he's done 13 weeks. He's done a second 13 weeks, and now he's trying to renew for his third round of 13 weeks, which, you know, twist my arm. That works for me because I don't have to go in and flip the unit until, you know, he's ready to move on, and he might decide to take an assignment in another city. And so at any given time, he could give me his notice that he's moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to Kathy's point, it is, we do often talk about traveling nurses, but they are not just nurses. And actually, one of the leads that I got in the last couple of days, it was a husband and wife who were traveling, and the husband is, I think, the CEO of the hospital. I think he's newly appointed CEO of said hospital. I don't remember which one it was, but you know, they're coming into town and they just need somewhere short term until they sort of get settled. And I assume if they plan on being here long enough, maybe they'll buy a house. But they know that they have access to these sort of midterm rentals. And I've seen some other things on there too, other professionals. I think one was an engineer who was here working with an engineering firm on some big development project. So
CEO, go ahead.
I was going to say the proper term when you talk about short-term rentals, people say, oh, you do Airbnb. You've got an Airbnb. Well, no, I have a short-term rental. I happen to advertise it on Airbnb. So when you're talking midterm rentals can be any type of corporate type housing where somebody just needs a midterm. They need to be there for, you know, 6 months or 3 months or 9 months or whatever. And so it's called a midterm. But folks kind of shorten that to say, oh, you do traveling nurses. Well, that's just a platform that we advertise on. So I just kind of want to clarify that for some folks that are brand new to this, that might be a little confused about why we keep calling it Airbnb and traveling nurses. Those are just kind of the catchphrases that we all use.
Yeah. And there's a whole nother world of midterm rentals, which I can't speak to yet, but I hope to one day. I think the more work that you do to find your midterm tenant, the more money you can get. There's a really good niche of midterm rentals where people deal with insurance companies. So somebody's house catches on fire, and it's going to take 3 months to make the renovations to repair the fire damage. Their insurance company is going to pay to put them up, you know, somewhere for that period of time. Now, typically, if you need somewhere to stay for 3 months, you know, a hotel, it's not really a great option, especially if you have kids or pets or, you know, whatever. And so I know some people that are specifically targeting and just working with insurance companies to fill those requests. And a lot of those, they're kind of just naming their price and the insurance companies are paying it. So I don't know how that one fits into the formula, but... again, it takes a little bit more work. You're not probably getting those 20 leads a day. But when you do, you know, connect with one person, you know, you can charge a little bit more money. So there's several niches in that. Corporate executives is another one. That's one thing that I would love to get into soon is I would love to have a single family house in a higher end neighborhood here in Columbus. And really go to some of the big corporations that have headquarters here and try to find somebody who needs, you know, housing for an executive, short term. I have a friend who just did one up in Cleveland. They rented a house to the CEO of a company. I think he was renting the house for $5,000 a month, and it was a 5-year lease. Granted, it was a big house, but you know, that's helping him pay down the mortgage and things on a pretty high end property. So,
well, we have a couple of questions. One is, how does someone check to see if their city is a good fit for a short term or a midterm rental? And for midterm and short term, the best way to start to see if you're a good fit is to see the supply and demand, see what's out there. And so the first thing that I would recommend you do if you've got a property and you're thinking about doing a short term or a midterm is go to Airbnb And now this doesn't mean your zoning will allow it. That's a whole separate conversation. So make sure you check with your zoning if you already have a location in mind. But once you know that you can do a short-term or midterm, then go to Airbnb and see what the supply and demand is in your area. And that'll kind of let you know what the market will bear, what other Airbnbs are charging in your area, and seeing, go to their calendars, see how often they're booked. See, so you can do a little bit of research just by looking at some of these platforms. And for midterm, go to Furnish Finders and see how many properties are in your price point or what your price point should be. And just do your research and see what the supply and demand is there. Now, I will say the reason that I'm getting a lot of leads on my midterm is I'm a firm believer in marketing that you have to enter the conversation in your customer's head and not make them enter the conversation in yours. And so the first thing that I did is I followed all of the traveling nurse chats and Facebook pages, and I made a list of their complaints. And a complaint is we hate to pay a deposit because if we don't renew our assignment, we have to sometimes wait up to 30 days to get our deposit back. And we've already taken another assignment and we had to come up with yet another deposit. And so they hated deposits. So I made a note of that. Then they said, we hate that we have to pay a monthly rent every month, because when we're paying every month, if our 13 weeks ends in the middle of the month, all of a sudden we now have to wait up to 30 days to even see if we can get a refund for that last month that we didn't really get to complete, because we've now taken an assignment maybe in Cleveland or in Cincinnati instead of in Columbus, and they have to move on and now they're waiting for their money. Now, a lot of the traveling medical professionals, they will get a stipend from whatever hospital that is bringing them into the city, and that stipend goes directly to them. And then they pay their expenses, but it's kind of like an expense account, if you will. That stipend is intended for them to pay for their housing, their travel, if they're going to try to go back home on the weekends, their extra utilities because they're away from home and maybe meals out or whatever. And so I then did a little research. What is the average stipend? Well, the average stipend in Columbus, Ohio, now it may be different in Cleveland, it may be different in your city. So if you're looking at a different city, find out what the average stipend is for those medical facilities. But in Columbus, Ohio, it's around $2,200 to $2,400 a month is what the stipend is. And so if you're gonna charge more than that, you might not get as many leads. Because a lot of those traveling medical professionals have families back home. This is their income, and they don't want to spend more than their stipend to be away from home. And so they don't want to take money out of their actual paycheck to live here. They want to do it all within their stipend. And so I decided for me, what works for me is to concentrate on midterm rentals, is to have one bedroom units. And then I try to cater to that single traveler that once they can get into a one bedroom, their stipend is more than enough to pay. And I can still double my rent from long-term to midterm. I can still do double. And it still gives them some extra cash so they can eat out more often. I have laundry facilities on site. That's important to those traveling professionals. They don't want to have to go to a laundromat, even if it's in the complex. They really hate to have to go sit at a laundromat. They want to be able to throw their scrubs in, you know, and then go to bed and get some sleep because they just did a 12-hour shift. So I try to enter the conversation in their heads, and then I try to tailor that. So the first thing that I did on Furnish Finders is once I found my one bedroom, like Josh has, and I got it up and all furnished and ready to go and took some great pictures to put up on Furnish Finders, then I set it up that the first month is non-refundable, because most of them are 13 weeks and most of them will go for a while even if they don't finish their whole assignment. So I have a 30-day non-refundable because I'm in a condo complex that requires I can't rent less than 30 days. And then I made mine go week to week with no deposit. And so now I've got it all set up on a software program. I'm using Inago. I have it all set up on a week to week. And when they pay me their first 4 weeks, I mark that paid. And then Inago automatically invoices them every week. and then they stay as long as they want. And all they have to give me is a week's notice that they're ending. And so the leads are piling up in my inbox because see, I'm reaching that sweet spot of those travelers, those medical professionals. They're like, we want this one. We don't have to pay a deposit. All the utilities are included. We've got Wi-Fi, and we only have to give her a week's notice if our assignment ends or we move on. And they're like, sweet, that's the deal I want. And that's why I'm getting so many leads.
Yeah. One other thing to think about when you're thinking about like, okay, is my property good? Is my city good for short-term and long or midterm rental? It's like, well, why are people coming to your city? What is the attraction? Right. So it's like, so we talk about this often on the show. It's like, do we have a utilitarian kind of property, or is it more of a destination property? For instance, I own what I call a utilitarian property. I have a property. It's a single family home. It's on the north side of Columbus. It's extremely centrally located. Nobody is going to my Airbnb to see the beauty of Columbus, Ohio. That's not why they're there. They're there because it's 10 minutes from everything, that you can get to the fairgrounds, you can get to downtown, you can get to Children's Hospital, you can get to the campus. I mean, you can get to everything very quickly, right? So that's a utilitarian view. A destination view, which our friend Joe was asking this question. He's out in Lancaster, Ohio, which is near Columbus. Something that Lancaster has is access to Hocking Hills, right? Mm-hmm. So you might consider more of a destination play. So maybe you're not in the city of Lancaster, but maybe you're near Lancaster, right? You're just outside the city limits of Lancaster, somewhere that's near Hocking Hills, that people can get to Hocking Hills because that's why people are going there, right? But then in addition to that, it's like, okay, well, let's talk more midterm rental, right? So there's the medical side, we've talked about that. There's the insurance side, we've talked about that. But then there's also workforce housing, which is something that we haven't really touched on. Workforce housing is, hey, we need to house an electrician, a plumber, and a carpenter because we're building this factory down the street and we need to put them up for like 3 months. Cool. Okay. Well, what's better, to rent a house, a 3 or 4 bedroom house on a midterm basis, or get hotel rooms for 3 months? Well, the house on a midterm basis is way better than anything that a hotel could offer. So you see a lot of that. I have clients right now that are putting up workforce housing as midterm rentals, not because they're super luxurious or they're super they are centrally located, but it's, hey, I can get a 4 bedroom house for $3,000 a month. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, I'll do that. And so, I mean, areas that where a 4 bedroom house might command something like, you know, $1,600 a month. I mean, these guys are getting $3,000 because it fits their need, which is to house those professionals that they're bringing in for a specific project. Like in Columbus, for instance, the big talk of the country is that we're putting in this Intel factory 30 miles away. So it's like, okay, that's been a central focus to it for a lot of real estate people lately. The other thing is, so we have another question on here. How do we find more about insurance companies? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. How do we find out more about partnering with insurance companies to do some midterm stuff? Do you guys have any ideas?
I do. I actually was in the insurance industry way back in the day. And what I would do if I were wanting to cater to that market is you're just going to have to do your research and get into the claims departments of the big major players. Now, here's the good news. In Columbus, Ohio, we've got a ton of home offices of insurance companies. We are the insurance company home office capital of the world is Columbus, Ohio. So if you want to get into insurance companies, Columbus, Ohio is the place to do it. But you have to just find your way into those claims departments and just kind of do your research. It might take some calls and you know, some on, you know, boots on the ground kind of work where you've just got to, you know, get out there and go visit some of those home offices and just find out who the person is in the know and get on their list. And that's all you need to do is get on their list. And because you know what, that claims adjuster, he's only got so many minutes you know, once he opens up a claim, to get this family taken care of. You know, he has to just get them taken care of. And so if you're at the top of his list, you know, you're going to get some calls. So you're just going to have to kind of do your due diligence there and find your way into those. But Columbus, Ohio is a perfect place to do that. It says, would you use Furnished Finder for worker housing? Yeah, I would. Because Furnished Finder, it's not called, it's called Furnished Finders. You know, it, what it is, it's anybody that's trying to find furnished housing because they know it's going to be temporary and they don't want to have to, they don't want to have to pay deposits for utilities. They don't want to have to hook up Wi-Fi. They don't want to have to pay a deposit. They don't want to have to go buy furniture or pull a trailer from wherever they're coming from, you know, and bring furniture. They just want it to be more like a short-term rental, which is why midterm looks more like short-term it, at the surface. That's what it looks like because you've got the furniture down to the dishes in the cupboard. You know, you've got all of that provided. And then there's all kinds of systems you can put in place. I actually have checklists of everything that comes provided in my midterm. And so what happens then is the tenant that's coming in actually signs off on that list. So they have a copy of the list. I have a copy of the list. My flippers that flip it in between tenants have a copy of the list. And so that way we know what's to be left behind and what belongs to the tenant and what belongs to us. So it's all in a system. So I hope that's helped answer that question. Josh, I'd put you on mute there because we were echoing just a little bit. But do you have any additional comments about using Furnished Finders for worker housing?
Oh, I mean, I'm not getting the same lead volume as Kathy, but I'm also less effort. So I will say, I think whatever Kathy is doing, it must be working because she's getting significantly more leads than me. But the majority of mine have been nurses. There's been these sort of outliers that have been other traveling professionals. So I would say if you're targeting more of that workforce housing, like Adam was talking about, I would not solely rely on Furnished Finder. But again, you know, Airbnb, also you can host midterm rentals on Airbnb. They do.
Oh, your volume's more. Is his volume cutting out?
It's cutting out a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, your volume cut out just a little bit. So say that again about Airbnb. Cutting out.
We're cutting out again for some reason.
Okay, he's going to try it again.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just saying Airbnb does have a 30-plus day option for listings. So folks are probably looking there as well. We've actually been looking at a property here near Columbus that's a larger multifamily building. It's a lot of studio apartments. And we've tried to do our underwriting looking at workforce housing for that project.
You're cutting out again, Josh.
Give it another whirl.
I was hoping it wasn't me.
No, it seems we might have lost him.
Yep. Josh, it looks like you're kind of.
Yeah, he's frozen. So, I mean, I think what he was getting at is it's like, hey, there's more than just Furnished Finder to look at when it comes to workforce housing. You know, something that might even be worthwhile is going out and if there's a large construction project in your area, finding out who that construction company is and then contacting that construction. You got it? Did I guess? Is it you and me, bro? It's you and me. It is. Yeah. So reach out to that construction company, figure out, hey, do you need some housing for your guys that are coming in? Because, I mean, that's, you know, go straight to the source. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. Worst as they can say is no, right?
Yeah. I mean, the project, I switched connections. Hopefully it's better. the project that Adam's talking about here in Columbus, I think it's 7,000 construction workers. Those folks need a place to live.
Yeah.
And the company who's paying them needs them here. So mm-hmm. they need to find them a house. That's what they're going to do. So.
Yeah, I agree. Any other questions, put them in the chat. Let's see if we can't get your questions answered before we go. We're at the top of the hour again. Any last
one question that we had in there earlier that I don't think we addressed is somebody was real interested in starting wholesaling. They see Josh's signs around town and the We Buy Ugly Houses signs. Josh, you got any advice on wholesaling or starting to wholesale?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on wholesaling. I think when you're looking at real estate, one thing is...
Josh, you're still cutting out.
Oh, it's the craziest. It's like the one thing you got to know more than anything is like, it's like hilarious. It's like a movie, dude. Go ahead.
I was going to say deal access to deals is the most important thing.
And Josh, put in the chat how folks can get in touch with you. So if you've got somebody out there that wants to know more about wholesaling, they can get directly in touch with you. Josh is going to jump over and put that in the chat. So make sure it's to everyone there. Make sure your chat says everyone so that everybody can see that. And I also will put in, as I post the replay of this, I will put my contact, Adam's contact, and Josh's contact information in the replay. So if anybody wants to tap into that replay, you can do that as well. So on Instagram, just at Josh Hively, you can reach him there. That's an easy place to reach him. So feel free to do that. Any last questions from anyone? This has been great conversation. I love it. I love it. I love all things real estate anyway. My favorite topic, real estate. All right. Any last words of wisdom, Adam, before we go?
No, I mean, the biggest thing that I find in my experience is how little people know what kind of financial opportunities are available as far as lending goes. I mean, at the end of the day, it's hard to like buy something for nothing. Like you got to have some kind of money or something to put up to buy something. But even then, if you don't have income, if it's not the perfect picture, give me a call. Like there still might be an opportunity to help and to get something done. And also like if you got a rich friend, that's a great partner to have because any kind of liquidity, any kind of excess income that they've got, that goes on the total balance sheet and it's a great opportunity. So give me a shout for any kind of lending anytime. Adam Messmer, adam.messmer and mottomortgage.com. And 614-595-3457 is my phone number. I put all that stuff in the chat. Give me a shout anytime. I love talking about this stuff. It's like my favorite thing.
All right. I'm going to give you a little clue. What you can do is everybody that's out there, if you can open up the chat, you should be able to save the chat, the three little dots, and you should be able to save the chat. So hopefully that works for you. If not, make sure that you do a screen print. So you can scroll on your chat to the right information and just do a screen print of it. So that'll be helpful as well. Any last words of wisdom, Josh?
No, I think that's good. I think Adam's point was really well said. There's a million ways to make a million bucks. Even just inside of real estate. And so I say, just pick one and head that direction and figure it out as you go.
So for those of you that are listening, the Happy House Hunters, we do have an actual mastermind and also in the ins and outs of opening an Airbnb. We also have a smaller group that meets monthly. So you guys can, if you have additional questions, get in touch with me. Josh also has a group, a Newbie Real Estate. What's the rest of the name? Newbie
Real Estate Investors Group.
Okay. And so Facebook group, you can all three have a Facebook group, the Happy House Hunters, the create or the ins and outs of a B&B, and also the newbie real estate investors with Josh. We all have Facebook groups. So tap in and get connected. And if you have questions, just reach out to any one of us. We can, you know, send you the links if you need to, if you want to connect on a deeper level. And if you have questions, please get in touch with us. We're happy to share what we know. The tide rises all ships, and there's plenty of deals out there. And believe it or not, for you folks that are just getting started, there's plenty of money out there. Don't ever think there isn't. There's tons of money, tons of deals, tons of opportunities, and you can certainly have a piece of the pie.
Absolutely.
All right. We're just now a little past seven. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Again, go to kathybinner.com, scroll down the homepage. It'll tell you all of those events and how to tap in. So we'll see everyone next time.
Thanks. Bye, see you guys. Great conversation. Thank you.
Bye-bye.